Thank you very much. It's a curious thing, actually. I find myself here as the old. I'm getting to be an old man, and I'm still a U.S. Marine. In that, the one thing that has stayed with me, I didn't intend it to happen, is my experience and what I learned. And I'm here to tell you that I am grateful to the United States Marine Corps for what they did to me, for the education I got. I'm sure there are other people here who have been in the military, and let's share the fact. It's a good educational system. I was telling Zafar before the meeting, it's like being in prison. You say, I guess I learned something. All these years later, it is proving to be kind of important to me in a way that I hadn't anticipated. We see this phenomena of this terrible film, and you're sort of thrown back on yourself a bit, and you do have to examine who are soldiers, who's doing the killing, and what do they think they're doing when they do this, when they perform the orders. And I take it very personally, and I think that there's much that we could reflect on here might be helpful. The film, American Sniper, as Zafar said, it is a very ugly story. And we should probably ask ourselves, how could it happen that a man named Clint Eastwood went to the Republican convention really not so long ago, where he spoke on behalf of Mitt Romney in seeking to get the American people to admire and support Mr. Romney, and he chose a curious method. I'll bet you all remember. He put a chair beside him, and I don't know how many millions of Americans were watching, certainly many Canadians were, and he spoke to the chair. And people said, you know, this is rather strange. You're kind of like a Joe Biden moment, you know, like Biden and his problem not being able to take his hands off women when they come near him. Eastwood actually thought it would be interesting to pretend that he was talking to the President of the United States. And while he was doing it, he chose to, in order to score points against the President of the United States, he put obscenities in the mouth of the president, saying, oh, so I'm supposed to go F myself. What is that? A president shouldn't talk like that. And we were all thinking, he's not, Clint. You're talking like that. And we're all finding it, you know, you're freaking us out. And at that point, many people said, well, that's going to be the end of Clint Eastwood, in a way. And maybe that was going to be a sayonara moment, if you can pardon the expression. I learned that in the Marine Corps. That he's going to just ride into the sunset. Well, he did. Then he came back. And this is now the joke's on us. Because $400 million worth of movie business later, we're all saying, how'd he do that? And I can't think of anything better as an analogy than the Pied Piper. Everybody laughed and they said, oh, you know, he's just Clint Eastwood. And he's gone off his rocker and we're not going to vote for Mitt Romney. And now we've got the great Obama and all that. And then he produces this movie. And everybody goes to see it. And the same people who laughed at him have gone to the movie. And the same people who laughed at him regard his hero in the movie, Mr. Chris Kyle, as a type of an American hero. And that is a deeply troubling matter. And I know this is a meeting of people tonight who care about war and are anxious that wars and state violence, if they are to occur, ought to be lawful and ought to be considered properly before they're gone into, etc. Watching this, you can see how easy it is for the Pied Piper to arrive and steal your children. You thought you were going to have a big meeting and everybody's going to agree that Clint's an idiot because he's a Republican and he's a war advocate and etc. Then he makes a movie and Hollywood produces it, of course, and the United States military, if you don't know it, they love Hollywood. And they have great impact. So they combine to create a film in which the man who killed 161 people, what do they call that? They said confirmed kills. He said, actually, he said, I killed twice that many. Yeah. But he said, you know, he's a modest man. And so he is the hero. Now, I know if you read the New York Times, or if you read literary publications, and I do not recommend it, you will find people capable of deceiving themselves and saying, well, it's not really a pro-war film. Oh, really? I have a grandson. That's how old a Marine I am. I have a grandson, and he and I talk about war and whatnot. And we had to talk a long time after he saw this one. Because the people that run Hollywood are equally as smart as everybody in this room, strange to say. They can buy brains in Hollywood, and they know how to create a story where the man who killed 300 people, as Zafar said, every last one of those 300 died surprised because they didn't know they were about to be shot. Every one of those people that he killed, despite doing that, the man who did it is the victim, because it nearly cost him his family. He did four tours, almost cost him his family. And he has, they hint that he has PTSD. By the way, he was extremely macho and did not ever tell the world that he had post-traumatic stress. But Clint wanted us to think that. Incidentally, Clint fictionalized Mr. Kyle. He gave Kyle human characteristics, humane characteristics, which he did not, in fact, ever claim for himself. Chris Kyle, contrary to Clint Eastwood, said he was glad every last one of those people he killed. He considered every last one of the people he killed a savage. And something very important to know, and I refer again to the literary people who don't seem to pick up the points, Kyle said he in terms of being proud of it, that he basically had no compunctions, whereas Mr. Eastwood thought that he did. On the terms of how my experience relates to it, and the experience of anybody who served, Chris Kyle and Clint Eastwood are extremely dangerous in that they want us to think that breaking the rules, killing that extra person, as in the case of Kyle saying, when he thought that he might not have the record, he began to find a few extra. He said, I began to see people in my sights that were qualified as bad guys. That really, strangely enough, offends me, and I hope would offend anybody associated with the military. Because actually, he doesn't seem to even understand, and his admirers don't understand, that is a good soldier is not somebody who is good at killing. Good soldier, a good Marine, acting lawfully, behaves in a manner to bring about a positive result on the battlefield. And there are many times on the battlefield, the reason one side wins and the other side loses is that they know how to control fire. They only fire when they're told to fire, and they only fire at what they're told to fire at. If you have a cowboy, or we used to call them John Waynes, I don't know if you know the name John Wayne. Wouldn't that be funny if you don't? John Wayne was somebody who was going to put on a show about what a good Marine or why, that kind of thing he was. But such people are extremely dangerous. And there are plenty of Marines and other disciplined soldiers who have made sure that such people do not are not with them, and preferably are away from the front, not near it, because the purpose of warfare is to, frankly, is to prevail. one of the greatest generals in American history, Sherman, General Sherman, the Civil War, won by maneuver. His greatest accomplishments were simply so confusing entire armies that they gave up to him and nobody got hurt. Well, a few people got hurt, I understand that. I'm not, by the way, a Confederate, so if you can ask the Southerners, they'd say they got hurt pretty bad. But Kyle, and in this way I think Eastwood is almost subversive of the American military, and I thank him for that, because he's trying to portray somebody who is sort of this next stage of a villain, I'm afraid, in American military history, who breaks the rules, is not disciplined, and does that thing which we hear about in combat. Probably everybody here has had somebody that you were either in the service with or you knew uncles and grandfathers who served, who would say, well, you know, we did kill some women and children because we were afraid of them. And you don't want to have them behind your line, so you see a 10-year-old you don't quite know what to do with, and you think he might actually be someone going to harm you, then you harm him. And that's what Chris Kyle actually represents. The movie begins, as everybody knows, I assume, and you don't have to go to the movie to be told this because it is so shocking, with the sniper killing a child. And that's where I think they've gone, Hollywood has decided to go in support of the American Empire. They decided, I think, with the film Zero Dark 30, that it was time to justify torture. And if you're a patriot and you love your country and you really know the score, you'll torture people. Zero Dark 30 made it the thing to do. And don't let anybody kid you, because that is what that film did. So they decided they better go the next step. With this film, kill children, kill civilians, because they're all bad anyway. As it said in Vietnam, kill them all, let God sort them out. And that brings me to the problem is what Mr. Kyle found himself in, I really don't blame Kyle in some way, is that if you're going to have an empire, and I know that America's in denial, but everybody else knows it's an empire, you're going to be at what you call war. But actually what you're in doing is you're in the assault business. That's, by the way, USMC, that's what we were for, assaulting, specially designed. I really can't believe that Marines find themselves in the desert in Iraq, because that is not my training. But if you decide you're going to have to invade people, that you're going to ignore international law, you're going to say that you don't like Saddam because he's not pliable enough, and then you attack his country, or if you do it to Libya, what you're going to be, you or your minions, is you're going to be occupying. Therefore, you're not fighting soldiers. You're fighting civilians. And I, on my program, interviewed a man named Reppenhagen, a sniper, by the way, an American sniper who, bless his heart, is ashamed of himself. But he said, of course, the people on the other side had no uniforms. So what you're killing people who are not legally combatants, but the reason they're not legally combatants is neither are you. The U.S. has chosen this path, and Canada has decided to follow along like a good friend and neighbor and enter into this zone where they are fighting against people without any legal justification. And therefore, a young man like Chris Kyle becomes your best guy. Because when it comes time to shoot the kid, he's your man. Because he's a Muslim, he's an Arab, he's dark, and he's going to have to go. And just as, if you need information, And after running an empire is hard work, and you're in a bunch of countries where you don't belong, and you need to know things, and you need to know them fast, well, you just hurt people until they tell you what you wanted to hear. Incidentally, we're underlying that, what you wanted to hear, because that is, they will, you discover later, very, very often, they are lying. So what we're witnessing, it seems to me, with this film, and with Chris Kyle, is, I hate to use this word, but it's been coming to me, my mind ever since, I guess since I left the Corps, is that, by the way, every ex-Marine considers the younger Marine to be kind of not up to it. There's the old Corps and then there's the new guy. But we are experiencing what I would call decadence. You know, you have decadence in art, you have decadence in the novel, you have decadence in film, in culture. We're witnessing a decadence in the military, where standards are being set aside. There's a process of privatization taking place. Yeah. Reppenhagen, the sniper, told me, I asked him, because I was about this matter, I said, so you would, on occasion, you were part of an operations where you would surround the village, and the word was that there might be combatants, enemies, in that village, and at night you marked the house where you were gonna go, and then you kicked in the door and grabbed the people and did what you were gonna do, looking for the bad guys. He said, yes, and I said, my understanding is, reading your remarks, is that you didn't speak Arabic, and nobody in your group spoke Arabic. So what did you do? He said, we handed them over, we sorted them out, and then handed them over to the contractors. Contractor is a funny word to come into the ear of anybody who's been in the military. Because when you join and you serve, you're supposed to be, you're mandated to, what makes you feel able to do it is that you're operating under some kind of law. And there are rules. And so here you have, this is kind of like the American system with their prisons now. You arrest somebody, charged with him, and then you put him in a jail, and those are private contractors. It's not a state jail. It's not the jail doesn't belong to the state of California. It belongs to a private contractor. And in this case, they wanted to get information from people, and they had hired contractors who had hired people who spoke Arabic, who would take your prisoner and do whatever they did. He said often the prisoners did not come back. Please find this man, is Garrett Reppenhagen, but he is living witness to the I can't find another word to the and now I can't even find a word at all to the decline, to the degeneration of a military organization. That their standards are falling, their sense of self-respect is falling, because they are carrying out a mission which is, frankly, an imperialistic mission. It can't be rationalized. They did not have international law behind them when they broke, when they smashed, destroyed Libya, which is now just a total smoking mess. They did the same to Iraq with tremendous cost. They had no legal justification. And every soldier, every Marine who's acting then on orders following that illegal step is unfortunately, is like you poisoned him along with you. Making that decision, you have poisoned your soldiers. I don't want to make a strong analogy, but after World War II, this was pointed out that, you know, a lot of upstanding Germans ended up doing things on orders, and they thought that was the right thing to do. But we all said, no, 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 that's not the right thing to do. You have to pay a price for that. Well, it's time to say, look, on behalf of the soldiers and others, that we owe it to them to behave like good citizens ourselves. Remind them of the law, remind them of the political decisions that have been taken, and those which are right and those which are wrong, because there are right decisions and wrong ones. Instead, Mr. Harper and Mr. Obama say, I would like you to put my soldiers on a pedestal. I want you to think like a civilian who is not worthy of them. I want you to say to every one of them, when you meet them, I thank you for your service. That's what we're being told, because they say, we have a highway called Highway of Heroes, and you're supposed to bow down now. No citizen, no self-respecting person in a democracy bows to anybody else. And if someone serves, good for them. You say to them, I hope you served lawfully, and by the way, I don't like the policy. I don't have to say, thank you for your service. I say, I don't blame you. It's your fault. And by the way, it's a great myth that the American people rejected the Vietnam veterans, which is one of the games they play. They say, we're never going to have Vietnam again. From now on, we all love the military. False premise. There wasn't a time I didn't love them. I mean, they're trying to make it out. Is it, if you're against illegal wars, that somehow you're not in favor of the military. Actually, you're doing the military a favor by saying to them, I don't want you on a mission where you would do something you would be ashamed of or culpable for if there's any international law. I raise it tonight at this meeting because I think we have to talk about how there's been a manipulation of issues in order to put those who are asking for legal conduct by the government, by consulting the people and actually putting it in front of Parliament when you're going to do something. And actually, by the way, wouldn't it be great if we actually had a debate in Parliament on these issues? It's always, I recall during the Libya thing, they said, I called up with others, what about the NDP? Aren't they going to? And they said, sure, the NDP and the other members of Parliament are going to meet with a representative of NATO, and he's going to explain to them what they're doing in Libya. No. Don't you understand how democracy works? The way democracy works is if the people of Canada are being asked to participate in some violent episode involving Libya, they call upon their own investigators, call them Canadians, to go and come back and report. They don't say, do you know anybody in NATO that can come and help us out? That isn't how it works. A democracy says, we elected our people, various members. They will carry out that job. They will go and be the fact-finding mission. It won't be somebody visiting us from NATO that we get to question. You're defining yourself as a suburb of a great power when you do behave like that. So in my opinion, we're not against the military, and we're all for giving the population its job of deciding what is a good choice, what is a bad choice, and whether to be involved with this kind of thing that's going on and is about to take place with Syria. I want to say a couple more things about Mr. Kyle and where he and Obama, I think, have a lot in common. There is a tendency to kind of get on Kyle's case. Past tense. Mr. Kyle met he was a Navy SEAL, and he took a mentally wounded ex-Marine to a firing range for therapy. I guess you know about that. Incidentally, did anybody qualified to make that movie, it'd be Clint Eastwood. I mean, I can talk to chairs. I'll be able to explain that decision. I can't myself, but I assume he could do that. On Kyle, he had a quality that and deserves to be looked at closely. Because he is being projected, and we're in a political struggle, the cultural wars, he's being projected as a heroic figure, and many young people will, certainly in the U.S. and certainly in Texas, will want to emulate him. So looked at closely, he had some interesting opinions. He wore a cross on his arm. He got himself tattooed between tours of duty. And he said, I wanted them to know I was a Christian. This is the guy who also says I killed 161 people. I'm a Christian. I think what he put on his arm was very helpful to everybody in this room, and it certainly, I hope, addresses some of the things that Zafar was saying. He didn't put a cross on his arm. He put a crusader's cross on his arm. There's a difference. He put, and by the way, Mr. Kyle, give him his due, he knew what a crusader cross was. He said, it's a Templar cross. very sophisticated language, if you happen to be kind of crazy, I mean, or if you follow these things. A Templar cross is a very special cross because it's a cross of the Crusaders, and you might want to know that the Crusaders' headquarters was in Jerusalem. And the goal of the Crusaders was to protect the, what do they call them, the Christians who wanted to go to Jerusalem. The idea was to capture, as you know, the Crusades was to defeat Islam and to defeat Judaism, by the way. Many, many Jews died by the thousands at the hands of the Crusaders. It's, many Christians died at the hands of the Crusaders. The year was about 1000 through 1300. Jump up and correct me if you like, but I think I got it roughly right. And that is a cross that Mr. Kyle wanted on his arm. So when, and we all said obvious things, Kyle, you wanted the Iraqi people to know you were Christian. Well, what would give you the idea they didn't think you were Christian? I mean, they are a Muslim country. You're from the United States. They've heard that's not a Muslim country. They heard that. They know. So, no, you wanted them to know something else. You wanted them to know you had a Templar cross on your arm. And that cross was a threat to their lives. And if you do not remember it, ranking officers of the United States military have actually been hoisted out of Iraq because they had been caught on missionary work, telling their fellow officers that they were on a crusade. And there is a crusade of a type taking place. Mr. Obama may not be proud of it, may not want to talk about it. But you see, Chris Kyle is a kid from Texas. He kind of picked up the information. Now, if you go to Europe today, there's another man famous for his crusader beliefs who killed 70 people in Norway. He loves the Templar cross, and he knows about it. So if we're in the right place, right, this is a church. The crusade, the people led it, had the goal of destroying Islam. And when they got to Jerusalem, and they captured it and lost it, and as you know, it's a long story, they eventually were driven out. Only a matter of centuries it got rid of them. But when they arrived in Jerusalem, there were Muslims there, there were Jews there, and there were Christians. And the Crusaders killed all of them. They killed them because they were all living together. Because, you see, those Christians didn't believe in a crusade. They believed in living with their Muslim neighbors and with their Jewish neighbors. But the Crusaders were bringing the new gospel, the new message, the new aggressive Imperial Christianity. Coming back to Mr. Obama. Obama says, I believe in American exceptionalism with every fiber of my body. You know, I know he went to Harvard, and I know we're all supposed to, you know, take our hats off to educated people, and he's got a law degree. But that is an amazing, terrible declaration, because he's telling the world that there's one country above all, and he has no doubt about it. I think that the American liberal, we can call them that, have crossed the Rubicon. They have, maybe they're going the wrong direction, but they've crossed it. And they don't see, there is no, at this point, there is no brake on the machine. There's no way to turn it off. They have lost their mind. Mr. Kyle thinks of himself as a Christian, thought of himself as a Christian. Mr. Obama is a Christian, I understand. Don't they understand what blasphemy is? To say that, as Kyle said, I fight for God, country, and family. So he is from a country that says that it is exceptional and takes it upon itself to say such a thing, while at the same time entertain the impression that the word God means something to them. Because you don't know anything else about Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, is that humility is in there somewhere, and particularly for nations, because there's no nation above the others. This is particularly true of Christianity and Islam, that, and we've had so many wonderful Christians to demonstrate, and to give them their due, the Catholic Church fought against this idea of nation. You can't have a nation in front of others, because the idea is all souls are there, all souls are equal in the eyes of God. Doesn't Obama get it? But, well, he gets it all right, but he figures he will be destroyed politically if he doesn't say it. And now, and I'm sure, looking around, I see a room full of people who probably heard of Jon Stewart, American comedian, sort of the jester of choice. He wanted to explain this phenomenon the other night, and he was angry with Senator McCain, and he was, no, oh, pardon me, Juliana, America's mayor. We have America's sniper, America's mayor. And so then we had, and Stewart showed Mayor Giuliani, X, saying, I don't think Obama loves this country. I don't think he believes it's exceptional. It's got a special mission. He's kind of a third world kind of guy. You know, he believes in Hawaii and Kenya. And that was the Giuliani idea, but, you know, put down. But then Stewart, to say, hey, you can't say that, he puts up Obama, that lovely speech, which you can all go to thanks to the internet and watch. And Obama says, and he's speaking at West Point, where the Army graduates its officers, I believe in the American exceptionalism with every fiber of my body. And then Stewart turns to his vast audience and says, you see, he does, so he's okay. Well, the problem is, you're all crazy. You, Jon Stewart, you're crazy. The mayor of New York, well, everybody knows Giuliani's crazy. But the president of the United States is the one carrying the banner of exceptionalism. And I'm sorry to say, that if they cannot climb down from that, we are going to be in a jackpot. There's really no question that, obviously, we all know in this room how to bring peace. We're approaching, we're serious on our list of things to say something about. That if you want to resolve the matters without war and save lives, you have to do the old-fashioned things. You have to have diplomats. You have to have negotiations. And when you meet people, you treat them with respect. You don't say, well, you're Muslim, you're an Arab. No, no. You say, if you're the representative of your country, good. This is where we start. You don't say, I wouldn't have voted for you. What's that got to do with anything? But the President of the United States, and it's Obama, not bad old Reagan or bad old Bush. It was Obama who said that the President of Syria must step down. If you've been elected President of the United States, you're not elected President of Syria. It's pretty obvious. But he doesn't seem to know that. And so we're talking about a Harvard man who talks like a crazy person. And I don't think we should flatter them with talking about how smart he is or this and that. No, no. This is where, and by the way, Canadians are supposed to stand up and say, you can say talk like that, but I'm not going to do it. Because we do not want to see a nuclear war. We don't want to see a confrontation, say, with Russia. We don't want one with China. And we know that we have to send our diplomats to talk to their diplomats, and then you sort it out. But if you say, no, we're the greatest country on earth, and the president of Syria must step down, and that we are the indispensable nation. My understanding of the Bible is you're going to have bad things happen to you. Bad things are going to happen. Pride goes before the fall. And that is, I'm afraid, where we have got ourselves. I think probably, based on the way this is going, I probably give you guys a chance to talk. So thank you very much.